morning, Modesto. You are listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. Today is Saturday, April 27th. Hope you had a great Easter, everyone.
Absolutely.
Hi, Claudine.
Hi.
What's happening?
How was yours?
It was great.
Yeah?
It was great. Got to spend time with the family, went to church, and had a great time with everyone. And it's just, I feel refreshed.
It's good because Easter is one of those holidays that I think universally we take off. It's really one of those days that we really take off.
Yeah, so I hope you got some time, you know, to relax. I know you're go.
Out playing with the horses.
Him playing with the horses, which is great. So we have this topic. So this is part two today of how to start a business. And even if you already have a business.
Yeah, even if you already have a business, because there's a lot of people who started quite by accident, or you know, you just kind of fell into the next thing. You know, I have a client who literally fell into a ragingly successful business, making hydraulic hoses and high pressure hoses, and he had an account, and the account was very large to start with, and he was able to service it. And the next thing you know, he kind of became the game in town, and one referral led to the next, and he just really grew. It was super organically, but it was super by surprise, and was really taken off guard when he had to really stop and consider a lot of things that are normal everyday business things, but had nothing to do with what he did as a trade, which was, you know, make hydraulic hoses and high pressure hoses. So there is a lot of other aspects to being in business. It's not just what you do. So if you brew beer, or if you, you know, make leather goods, or if you sew, or, you know, whatever it is you do well. Understand there's a lot of other aspects of being in business, and some of them you're going to take to and it's going to come easy to you, and some of them are going to be difficult. Know where your resources are. Know how to go get your resources. That's what we're here for. I know, you know, we're here working with clients on a day-to-day basis. If you want to reach out to us, we're at sharon-law.com. That's sherron-law.com, and area code 209-427-2200. We're here to help. And I know, Leo, you're also available on the web.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for bringing that up. You can find us. I am all about profit. I'm the chief profit officer of Greenland Advisors at www.greenlandhq.com, servicing clients all from LA to Sacramento and beyond. Call us 559-207-3148 or look us up on the web at our website. And we just love helping businesses get to where they need to be successful, be profitable. Whether you have an exit strategy or not, we can help you create one, and Claudine will help you just making sure that you are completely and totally protected and ready to grow. And I'm going to make sure that you are successful, profit. You have plenty of cash in the bank to seize the market opportunities out there. But enough about mature business. Let's go back to starting a business. Baby businesses. So I was telling you, you know, before the starting of the show today, that a lot of entrepreneurs get in business and not really fully understanding the metrics and or how to really conduct business. And great example of that is was flipping channels the other day. Usually don't have time for that, but it was late night, and Cheddar TV is one of those channels that, you know, it just came out of nowhere. I have multiple Hulu and Netflix, and so I landed on this channel, and this is the show by Sprint, sponsored by Sprint, and you get 1 minute to pitch your show.
Right.
So, you get 1 minute to pitch your business idea. So these are all startups. These are all ideas. Some of them had revenue. Some have no revenue. But they want to raise capital from investors or, you know, angel investors, kind of like the little mini Shark Tank.
Right.
So it was interesting, and how is this going to play out in our show, is that one of the entrepreneurs that was there had this consumer product that he wanted to take to Costco. It was a great product. Don't remember the details, but he wanted to put it in Costco, and he had talked to one of the buyers at Costco, and he was excited. So he came with this notion, this deal in the pipeline to pitch us. So he was going up in the elevator, and you get to, so you're recorded actually talking about your pitch to the investor. So here I am, you know, I got this great blah, blah, blah concept. I'm looking for $500,000 against 10% of my company, blah, blah, blah. It was compelling enough that he got to the top floor and he was let in to talk to, do a more of a bigger pitch to the investors,
okay,
these angels.
So you're pitching In an elevator.
Elevator for 1 minute.
By yourself.
So, right.
Great.
So you go up, and the whole time you're going up to the penthouse where they are.
Right.
Right. And there are four of them sitting, and there are cameras everywhere. And then you get to be, you know, so you, the whole experience is on tape. And then you, they have a choice. At the once you get to the top, where you're supposed to go, they either will push a button that will let you in.
Okay.
To pitch to them some more.
Right.
Or they will send you back down to the lobby.
Ooh.
Most of them,
long ride down.
They have a long ride down, but few make it in. And this person, this guy actually makes it in. And so within a couple of minutes of the pitch, he was asked, you know, I'm so excited about this product. And, you know, Costco is wanting to place an order. And I says, great, tell me more. So he said, well, you know, they think they can order about $100,000 a month. And they asked how much revenue he had. It would basically triple the size of his business. And $100,000 in revenue, and this is going to be great. And the angel investor said, well, or asked him, did you know the policy, you know, the payment terms of Costco? I said, I think so. Did you know that they can offer you net 90? And they supposedly, let's say they place a $100,000 order and it goes well, and then they want another $100,000 order the second month, and then they want another order next month. So all of a sudden, you have $300,000 worth of invoices that Costco owns. When do you think you're going to recoup your money?
Yeah, this is a huge problem for business owners. And I'll tell you, this is the conundrum that you find yourself in. You've sold the account, and you're thinking that this is it. This is the dog. I am finally sold.
Here come the millions.
Yeah, or it's my sweet spot where I can just sit here and I can just punch this out and it's going to work great for me. And what people don't know and realize is the bigger they are, the longer they take to pay. And I was telling you earlier, my husband and I had a similar experience, and he sold an account when we were in the janitorial business. And he, it was a national food chain, and he sold the account throughout the Central Valley. I think there was 20 or so stores, and, you know, several hundred dollars a piece, whatever the number was. And we thought, oh, this is it. This is gravy train now. We've got these accounts. we do them, each one of these, stores once a month, and, you know, there's 20, 30 stores, whatever it is. And this is gravy train. And little did we know that they were, not only were they so incredibly slow in paying, we had gone three cycles of cleaning before we got even one invoice paid. And then it was just, they knew they could do it, and it was just a constant chasing of invoices. And, you know, this one didn't get paid, and this one's from 4 months ago that's still hanging out. And, you know, and it just became such a massive undertaking just to manage getting paid and manage the invoices, that it became very clear to us very quickly that we could go do a residential customer service, a residential customer, get paid while we walked out the door, hit the bank on the way home, and, you know, be done. So there's a cost to all of that time. And I think small business owners, particularly new businesses, don't always factor in. And I know you talk about AR all the time.
All the time.
But the piece about AR, it's not just, do you have invoices out there that are going to get paid? It's what's it going to take to get them paid?
Well,
how many hours do you spend on the phone making a phone call?
I love this article that you found for the show. And rather than me saying, I'm just going to read it, because it encapsulates this whole thing about, you know, dealing with large vendors, large clients. Are you financing your clients or your vendors? Ever notice why massive companies tend to not pay faster than 45 or as much as 120 days? They are using their size and position in the industry to set their cash management terms. Pay attention. Unfortunately, for many small and medium-sized businesses, entrepreneurs end up financing their clients who are 10 times their size. The problem only gets worse, because in order to attract the vendors, you need to deliver your product and usually end up paying fast as less than 30 days. It makes logical sense, as your ability to pay quickly puts out your request on top of the most vendors you have engaged. So your vendors are happy.
That's correct.
Because they're getting paid quicker. Except that your clients are not paying you. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, there's a huge gap.
There is a huge gap. And all of this is addressed. So we're going to go back to, we started last week talking about the whole idea. I think we spent an hour talking about the whole idea. And I think we should tell our listeners a little bit more logistics. You know, when we get to the meeting. Okay, hey, we need to go on break. Gosh, let's do it. Let's keep going. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Lee and Claudine. We'll be right back. So welcome back. My goodness. Last time, I got reprimanded by our producer. He says, I can't believe you almost went over the break. I apologize. This is just an exciting topic, guys. And if you're listening to the show, it's real, transparent, authentic talk about business. We're talking about AP and AR and starting a business. And why do you care? Why does it matter, Claudine? So where were we?
We were talking about, are we financing our vendors? And, you know, this right. is a subject that's near and dear to my heart because, you know, we've been in the construction industry for a long time. And I have such a heart for the folks that are out there in the trades and trying to make a living because they, you know, are prohibited by law from taking money up front. You know, there's some caveats and there's some workarounds on that. But by and large, in the construction industry, our contractors have to supply all of the materials, all of the labor, get all the work done, and then they have to wait to get paid till after. And, you know, you're literally financing the customer's job throughout the whole process. You know, if you are a contractor and you went to your residential client who wants to have a kitchen remodeled and you said, sure, you know, Mrs. Jones, it's going to require, you know, $50,000 and, you know, I need a check for $50,000 up front, everybody would automatically think you're a crook. I mean, because that's just not how we do business in the construction industry. But
how do you overcome that?
It is a challenge because you can't outprice yourself out of the industry. So yes, you could bank into your estimates. You could bank in the financing costs or the what we call also the carrying costs. Mm-hmm. But then you outprice yourself against your competition. So you really have to be strategic. We work very, very closely with clients who do this. We write contracts where they can get progress payments. We ensure that we utilize estimating and calculating on those progress payments. So we know an estimate of how much money is going to be put out at this particular stage of the job. And then we require this payment. And a lot of the contractors, they're pretty good at doing that. But we really help you by getting solid contracts behind you so that you can ensure you're going to collect. But I'm kind of digressing a little bit, but going back to the idea, are we financing our vendors? Are we financing the businesses? In many cases, the answer is yes.
Yes. So we live in the world of the difference. Okay. So we're talking to business owners who actually have accounts receivable. So this concept will be foreign if you deal on a cash basis.
Right.
So if you're, you know, if you're
a bakery,
a restaurant, anybody that, you know, that comes and in exchange for something, they pay you on the spot, then you have different problems and AR is not going to be your problem.
Right.
But it's not like you're home free. So write a business plan. We talked a lot about business plans. You got to have a business plan. You can get templates out there on the internet. You got to have something. Does it have to be perfect? No.
No. And it should be revised regularly. I know in the very beginning, you really kind of rely on, as the years go by, you rely less and less on it. But it's something that should be revisited. It is your guidebook. It's your game plan.
Yeah, I mean, imagine playing a professional sport without a game plan and trying to understand how to outsmart your competition, the opposing team. It's no difference. Why shouldn't you take the time to, basically, you're playing Russian roulette with your own life, you know, if you're not taking the time to create a business plan.
You are, and most people don't do it. They frankly don't do it. I don't know if it's you don't want to slow down long enough. I know we have this kind of phenomenon when people get into contracts that we are only looking at the desired result of the contract. So, you know, so for example, you and I are getting into a contract and you're going to provide me widgets and I'm going to pay you X amount of dollars. And we're really excited. We're getting into this and yes, we're going to make money and, you know, everything's going to be, you know, rosy and everything. And we don't strategize the exit plan or what I call the what if plan. What if this doesn't work? What if that doesn't work? What if I want to not do business with you anymore? What if, you know, you eat tacos at lunch and I just can't stand tacos. So we're just going to be done with business. and we don't look at all of the what ifs. And I think that is a phenomenon because we just are looking at the bright side. The same thing happens when you start a business. You're really only looking at how this idea is going to work. I know this is going to work. This is going to be great. We're going to reach all of our goals. We're going to, you know, everything's going to be fantastic. The business plan to sit down and do it correctly requires you to sit down and go through all of the what ifs.
Right.
I'll tell you.
Great point.
It's invaluable. It's absolutely invaluable because you've thought about it before it happens. And you then when it does happen, you kind of have an idea of how you're going to handle it.
So we have a business plan and you're going to flesh it out with how much capital, you know, the lifeblood of your business you're going to need in not just for the startup phase. You have to assume that you're not going to get any type of bank financing for the first couple of years. So how are you going to finance it a year from now if things go south? So you have to understand that. And what's next on our agenda is who's going to be on your team? If you're a sole proprietor and you're starting solo, you know, that it's you. You are the CEO and the janitor. You're the president and the secretary and everything else. But as you grow, you got to be thinking about adding to your team. So what do you think? What are some people that should be on your team?
Well, another phenomenon that we see a lot with business owners, and I experience it with myself, you run your business according to your personality. Mm. And so your personality really is going to have a lot more to do with how your business is run than you really think about it. And that's that the business plan stage is when you really need to consider that. Are you the type of person who is just go, 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 go. Everything needs to be done now. Then you need to be able to hire people who are going to assimilate with that type of personality. And that's going to be kind of the personality of your business. Are you the type of person who really, really wants to be liked? Then you're going to have a hard time firing people. You know, you're going to be that person who just wants to work it out and very charitable and things like that. So so that person has a whole nother set of circumstances and obstacles that they need to learn how to avoid. But as part of the business plans have certain sections, there's the market analysis, there's the company description, and this is really your management and organization. And it starts with establishing, are we going to have one manager per shift? Are we going to have a service business where we're going to have a manager in each vehicle that's out on the road? You know, it's really unique, but you need to stop and sit down and think about how you're going to structure how many managers versus how many employees. And maybe you're only going to have one employee. Perfect. Great. But that is a structure that needs to be outlined.
So I was writing this down as you were talking, and I think who is on your team, it's critical. Now, do they have to be employees? No. I think I am a big proponent of having a board of advisors almost from the get-go.
Yes.
You know, there would not have been a Steve Jobs without a Steve Wozniak.
That's correct.
There would not have been a Bill Gates without Paul Allen. There is something about, you know, Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan. There is something about the chemistry of the founders. Do what you do best and hire the rest. That's what I always say. So if you're good at the vision and pitching the services and selling and closing deals, be the VP of sales, be at the forefront. I think every business owner should be good at sales, whether they do it or not. But there is everything else. Who's going to do the operations? If you're building something, if you're building software, it's good to have a good chief technology officer who is a co-founder, who cares, who may not be good pitching the idea, talking to investors, but is great at producing product. And then if you are a great builder, right? If you have this concept, you know, if you're in the construction business and you understand construction, well, that's great. Who's going to mind the money part? Right? And how to pay the vendors, how to administer, you know, there's this whole thing about the real estate and the construction industry that is cash management. The volatility and the difference between, you know, people getting paid and you paying your vendors and meeting payroll and certified wages and all that kind of stuff. Either you're good at it or you're not. If you're not good at it, you're going to hire the right people.
That's right. And you really need to look at each section of your business individually and what does it take to be good in that particular section. I have a client who is a painting contractor and really, really great guy. I mean, he is just one of the nicest guys that you ever meet. And people want to give him work. He's just that kind of guy.
Yep.
You can't help it.
Likeable.
Yeah. And he's just that guy. So he is the head of estimation and, you know, job sales. He's that quintessential person that people just want to give him work, and has been, you know, very, very successful and seen some really amazing success in a difficult industry. If you're not that person, then maybe your job needs to be, you know, managing logistics. I look at people when I work with clients, I say, ask them typically, are you a people manager or a project manager? There's two different types of people there. And I know myself, I can manage people, but I'm a much better project manager. It's just me knowing myself. There are people out there who love managing people. They love coaching and they love bringing them along and develop the skills and
they
all of
bring
that.
People up.
Yeah, motivational. And those people are great people managers. And they may be really, really super bored doing project management. So really kind of assessing the personalities. And you can really even get really crazy and work with your oncoming employees with personality tests. They're out there. They're on the internet. They're easy to access. And you can give employees personality tests to kind of assess where their skill levels are, what they like to do.
So, okay, so let's dive a little deeper. Okay, so there are some key people that you need to have on your team. And they are, you know, you need to have somebody advising you on the tax side. This is not an employee.
No.
Don't take on doing your own taxes.
No.
Even CPAs don't do their own taxes. There's something about it that you need to, first of all, if you know what you're doing, you're going to be tempted to do the things that you otherwise wouldn't with a client, right? You're going to take some liberties with yourself.
Right.
That you probably need to have somebody else check on you. You need to have a great attorney helping you with navigating this very litigious society that we're in. And just being proactive. A good attorney is going to be proactive. You need to have a good financial advisor. You need to have a good insurance person. And we're going to have, coming up soon, you know, one of our guests is going to be, you got to have insurance as a way to leverage, as a way to hedge your bets, as a way to protect your investments. A great banker. You got to have great banker. And if you're in a product of selling widgets, you got to have a great supplier, whether that person is in or out of the U.S. Those is what makes up your team. Now, and then you got people who are going to be advising you on really the temperature of the market. You need to know what's going on in the marketplace. So those are, and don't settle for the first one that comes along. You got to, you know, you got to interview these people.
Right. And this really leads into kind of our next segment on business structure and putting together an advisory team. So you have your team of employees and then you have your advisory team, and your advisory team typically is not an employee, but you may have a key employee that,
that
is
true.
Part of your advisory team. It's not a situation where we just never do it. It just, there's going to be people who are not employees that, you know, wouldn't expect them all to be. But, you know, this is really where we get into business structure. And how do we structure ourselves from a sole proprietorship to an LLC?
That's going to be an exciting conversation coming up.
Yep.
So I don't want to start really too much on this topic right now until we come back from the break. But this is, if you are in business, think carefully as to how your structure is, because that'll play a role later, and even plays a role later as you exit if you want to sell your business.
That's
so
correct.
You are you will do yourself a favor. Is, you know, it boggles the mind to me how people just decide to skimp on advice.
Right.
You know, like, is it, I don't want to pay an attorney, so I'm going to go to a LegalZoom and actually create my own corporation. Later, $100,000 worth of trouble, you realize that you should have paid somebody $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 to get it right the first time, because we're not the expert. I'm not an attorney. Why would I even claim to be one?
It's about $1,100.
But you saved $100,000 worth of headaches. So, hey, you're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine here on Power Talk AM 1360. We'll be right back. Everybody, welcome back. We're having so much fun talking about business here, Business and Legal Talk with Leon Claudine here on Power Talk, which is, wow. We need to start kind of bringing it home. So we have talked about a lot of things. Let's move on to licensing?
Licensing. Well, I think licensing is one of those things that, you know, you have to have your business license. You know, that's just kind of a thing. More so, licensing is if you require a particular license to conduct your business, do not attempt to do it without a license. And I know so many people are attempting to, the classic is contract without a license. I mean, if you're, you're doing painting work and you're every third or fourth job, you keep it under $500, but the rest of them are kind of over $500. I just really want to work with clients and express to people, don't try to navigate around things. I have clients come in every day and they say, okay, well, I'm going to do this. I recently had a client who bought a diesel truck, you know, for hauling goods. And he had never been in the trucking industry. And then he realized that the, you know, the insurance when you're brand new is very high. And
all
so, yeah, he's going through all of these explanations and, well, if I have the truck and it's under so-and-so's name and then so-and-so it's on their insurance. And then I, you know, we have a corporate and we're, and I think I said during the conversation three times, what are you avoiding? What is it you're trying to avoid?
Mm.
Just
what do you say?
We didn't really get down to it, although I think it was a world that was new to him, and so he was just, I don't know if it was avoiding paying the higher insurance premiums or if it was just a world that's super new, and so he was just kind of swimming around like, oh, this is going to be really expensive over here. Well, maybe I can do it this way. When you find yourself starting to do that, and you're starting to create all of these ways to kind of navigate and maneuver around, stop yourself, ask yourself, what is it exactly I'm trying to avoid?
Great takeaway, huge takeaway.
If it's avoiding, if you're trying to avoid writing a check for that insurance policy, get over it, write the check, and move on with your life.
Right.
Because these, all of these strategies to, oh, if I just, if, you know, I will bid the job, I'll give the client five invoices for $500 each, and then I'll stay under the $500 limit for contracting without a license. And ultimately, just go take the test.
Why?
Just start with legit.
Right.
Throw it out there. Be legit.
I get it. Hey, I have this question for you. And I just wrote it. Franchising.
Ooh.
Ooh. All right. Ooh. So if you had a choice, if you're starting a bit and you're quite not sure what you want to do, what do you think about the concept of franchising?
I think franchising has its place. We've done some franchise agreements. We've drafted them from the beginning to the end. You know, just so people know out there, whenever you draft a contract, the contract can be either weighted, say, for one party, or it's weighted for the other party, or it can be a very neutral contract. So, for example, if we write a lease and the client is is the landlord, that's our client, we would typically write it weighted on behalf of the landlord. That's our client.
Right.
So, you know, we're looking out for their best interest. Franchising is always weighted for the franchisor.
Right.
So if you're looking at Pizza Hut and you're looking at buying a Pizza Hut franchise or Subway or, you know, whatever the case may be, go into it 100% understanding that you are there for the benefit of the franchisor. You're maybe going to
take note of this if you're listening to the show.
You're going to maybe make a little bit along the way, but they are not there for your benefit. So people get into franchise agreements thinking that they're going to have all of this support from corporate, and corporate's going to help them be successful. And I think to some extent that's the sales pitch that franchisors give to franchisees.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, come on with us and, you know, give us 20% of your take, and in exchange for that, you won't have to think about decorations, you won't have to think about lighting, you won't have to think about, anyway, we're going to help you. It is
right.
Something that you need to go into eyes wide open. I think there's a great place for them. I think for people who are not necessarily trying to make a living off the franchise, and you have three or four of them, and so you're making a fractional amount of money off each one of them.
Right.
I think it's a great place. There's a lot of structure.
Right.
If you want to go into business for yourself and you want to be creative and think of your own ideas and do things on your own, or, you know, sales plans or product plans that, you know, campaigns, we used to call them in the nonprofit, campaigns. You're not going to do any of that. You are very regulated.
You know, I actually have a thing to say about franchising. When I first started in business, I was a VP I knew what I was doing. I had built territories from the ground up for a staffing company all over the West Coast. Even though I knew what I was doing, I still couldn't pull the trigger. So for me, getting involved in a franchise was a good thing until I learned the other side. And the grass is not greener on the other side. No. And then I learned that when you're in a franchise system, you may have ideas, and they may even adopt the franchisor, maybe even adopt some of your ideas, but you don't have the final say on anything. Down to the color and the color palette of the logo.
That's correct.
It's done. Now, it only works if you're on the passive side of things. You have an So if you're an owner-operator and you're working 80 hours at a McDonald's franchise, then it's not good. You basically trade a job for another job.
Right.
But if you have the wherewithal, the financial wherewithal, that you can actually buy four or five, and you're allowed by the franchisor to develop it, and you don't have to work at it, and you have the deep pockets, and you may actually buy yourself what I call an annuity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Franchises are very, very popular with professional athletes.
Yeah.
We've built a number of Paneras, and interestingly, who's owning them? But they are cookie cutter. They run essentially on their own. I mean, you have employees.
Right.
But it's not something that you have to go strategize. If you place it in a place that has the population and the franchisor will guide you through that, they kind of run themselves. They do.
People, yeah, you need to understand, eyes wide open.
Eyes wide open.
When you come into, so I thought it was great for me when I first started out, but I didn't realize that 10 years is too long. The average franchise agreement is 10 years long with a one-year, with a 10-year option to renew. Now you have a way out after 10 years.
Right.
You can't, it's very hard to break away unless you fail. But if you're already failing, what's the even point of being in business? So that's the thing about franchising. Just go at it. Get advice. You're also going to have super high net worth requirements. You cannot even touch a McDonald's franchise if you don't have at least $1.5 million worth of net worth.
But there, you know, there's a lot of ones. You would be so surprised if there are websites that have franchises advertised, and you can go through and click. You would be so surprised the franchises you can purchase. Ultrasounds. That's a new.
Is that a franchise model?
You can do. You can purchase a
no
franchise
clue.
That you know you do ultrasounds, and it's kind of popular. It's becoming more and more popular as we're you know more and more in tune with technology.
So just about every business can be franchised nowadays, right?
It's interesting. I mean, there's dental offices. There's everything. Dog walking services. Everything across the board.
Would you suggest retail as a way to get involved in business on a franchise level?
I think retail is an intermediate to advanced program.
That's a very nice way of putting it.
If you're a beginner in business, retail's is
too much capitalization.
It's huge capitalization, low margin, and then you have the things to deal with, which is your employees, employee theft, and things that really take a bite out of your apple.
So, all right, let's move on. Sole proprietor, legal entities. Let's get into that.
Okay, here we go.
All right, so this is your purview. This is your thing. What should, if you are a brand new business owner, should you incorporate? Which way should you stay as a sole prop? What do you think? What advice would you give your
listeners? We always start by assessing the liability of your business. So if you are a business that has a high liability, so anytime I have employees out on the road in vehicles, that's a high liability. I don't care what you're doing. Just the fact of having a company vehicle with an employee in it out on the road, automatic high liability.
Interesting. Okay.
So if you are a seamstress, very low liability. What's the worst that you're going to create?
The dress is not going to fit. I'm going to sue you.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you may have a couple thousand dollar, you know, liability.
Exposure, right?
Yeah, exposure. So we always start by assessing the liability. People need to understand if you are two or more people and you're operating for a common goal, you are a partnership in California. Whether or not you have a partnership agreement does not matter.
Say that again.
If you are two or more people operating for a common goal, typically we're operating for profits.
Right.
So let's say two guys get together and they want
two guys in a truck
and they go out and they want to start building fences and
right.
What you need to understand is you are now a partnership. and you equally have liability. So
wow.
The liability, if one person has more assets, personal assets, and one person has zero personal assets, the one person can receive all of the liability. It's joint and several liability is what we call it.
Mm.
And so you are equally liable and your personal assets are on the line. That means your home, your car, your bank account, your savings, all of that. So your ability to earn income, it's all on the line. So if you are doing something and you're functioning in some way that is potentially a liability, building a house, what's the worst case that could happen? The house, falls in. Huge liability. If you are painting, you don't really have a huge liability for the paint per se of the service that you're providing. But again, it's your employees being out on the road. So anytime there's a liability, we want to move you into a corporation. Now, what type of corporation depends somewhat on taxes and somewhat on what type of business you are. Sole proprietors take all the liability personally. So
why would anyone have a sole proprietorship?
Well, I know.
Aside from the $800 to the franchise, in case you want to have an LLC, but
yeah.
Why would anyone, given the state of affairs in business?
People come to me all the time and it is what it is. It's just, I've just been doing this I got my contractor's license, 10 years ago and I've just been a solo and, I run my own affairs.
Okay.
And the next thing I know, we have an issue. So we start with liability and then we move into what type of business are you?
Okay. We're going to continue to develop this topic more, but I'll say this. All things considered equal, for all liability aside.
Yes.
If you have a sole proprietorship, you have self-employment tax, a 15.32%. If you have a sole, which means you have a Schedule C and you're 1040, and your personal tax income, and your income tax, and you have a Schedule C and you have self-employment tax, why would you have that? So it's $15,000 for every $100,000 worth of net income. If all liability is set aside, why would you want to pay that?
Right.
Great question, right?
That is a great question. Things I don't want to pay it.
Don't want to pay it. So stay tuned. We're going to tell you what to do next. You're listening to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine. All right, we're back. So much to learn, right? And yet so great opportunities we have out there right now. There's
yes.
so much going on in the marketplace. There is no better time. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. And the next best time is today.
It's today.
Same for business.
Yes.
The best time to start a business was 10 years ago. The next best time is today. So everything that you hear from us, don't let it hinder you from pursuing your dream.
Absolutely.
Even with all the perils and the disaster that you hear and all these things that can go wrong, you will always be better off having your own business.
No question about that.
So this is not fear mongering. This is just, we are educated and we told you from the outset that this show is about helping you in just gut level honest, right from the line of fire, right from the front lines. We're running businesses. We're dealing with insurance. We're dealing with taxation. We're dealing with the legal stuff, and we're willing to help you. So if you're listening to the show and if you have questions, I'm sure you will reach out to us.
Yes.
Go to
please.
Greenland, and in my case, and if it is legal, I will definitely refer you to Claudine, but it's www.greenlandhq.com. By now you should know it by heart, or you call our office 559-207-3148. We're here to help you. And Claudine, where should we find you?
We are at sharon-law.com, and that's sharon-law.com. And our phone number is 209-427-2200.
So I told you at the end of the last segment that, hey, I was going to keep you. There was a cliffhanger.
Wow,
there's such thing as an auction. Corporations.
Here we go.
So what I tell my customers is, if the only reason why you would keep a sole proprietorship and you would not incorporate or go the LLC route, and this beyond this show, but is if you have hardly any income, You know, if you're doing a couple thousand dollars a year and you have there's no liability exposure and you have hardly any income, in that case, you'd be better off dealing with the 15%, you know, 15.32% of self-employment tax. But again, I'm hoping that you're not starting a business so you can keep it at $2,000 a year.
That's right.
That's not why you get into business. But there are some people that have hobbies, right? Start as a hobby and they, you know, I have a good friend of mine who started a business trading stamps, you know, postal stamps. They're actually it's a good little niche industry. People actually trade postage.
Interesting.
Yeah. In a postage stamp could be worth thousands of dollars from 1920. Like, there's an industry built around that. Right. It's a billion-dollar industry, a separate culture. People go to stamp shows and things like that. But what started us as a little business is producing him $300,000 a year in business.
Good grief.
So I told him, yes, that kind
Get
of money.
Out of self
stop being a sole prop,
yes,
and do something about it, because yes, he had so paying today. So he decided to go for an LLC, which is fine, because I always tell clients, like, if your goal is to grow beyond $1 million, you'd probably be better off with an S corp. If it is going to be less, it's LLC. Now, from a legal perspective, you know, I'm not going to speak to the legal side. That's Claudine's expertise. From a tax perspective, it's really a matter. It's not a one size fits all. Consult, you know, reach out to us and we'll figure out which is the best way to go, because it's a byproduct of your goals. Where you're going dictates that whatever entity. Now, some companies may need, if you take VC money, venture capitalists, if you take angels into your business, chances are, if you're going to reach over 80, S corp will not do. You're going to have to go to a C corp. Forget about the double taxation, but you know, if that's where you're going, you're going to need more investors. So anyway, so that's a quick thing on that.
So let me back up a little bit, because I know I have a lot of clients that come to me and are confused about S corp, C corp, or I hear somebody say, oh, I've got 6 C corps, or I've got 3 S corps, or whatever. And as if that they're badges that you put together. And I I want to explain to people out there who may not understand that corporation is a corporation. When you come to me and we file your articles of incorporation and we create your corporation.
Yep.
We don't determine whether you're a C corp or an S corp.
Right.
I tell them that's not a decision we make at the law office.
Go to the tax professional.
That is simply your tax designation.
Right.
It's simply how you're going to pay taxes. C, corporate taxes. S,
small.
Or what we refer to as pass through. Mm-hmm. So whatever it's the same thing with LLCs, as the same thing with sole proprietorship. Whatever money is not used to run the business is considered your profit. That's what you pay tax on. It's pass through taxes. But I want people to be clear that C corp, S corp, this, that, and the other, those are just simply tax designations. They don't make a difference. The corporation functions exactly the same. The LLC functions the same. LLC is a little bit of a hybrid, a little bit less requirements in terms of your filings and what.
Perfect for real estate.
It is. It's very good for real estate. In fact, I'm doing a seminar on using LLCs to purchase and set, buy and sell real estate. It's going to be a great seminar. But in any event, when you're looking at what type of corporation should I be, what's the difference between a corporation and an LLC? An LLC has a little bit less requirement.
Right.
You don't have to file your statement of information every year. You do it every other year. You have an operating agreement.
Yep.
And a corporation has bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, both of those are your guidelines. They're your rule book to running your business. And so they function in the same way. And LLCs, if you're in the construction industry, you want to stay away from an LLC, because the contractor's board will require you to have, I think, a $2 million bond instead of a $15,000 bond. And that's a mistake a lot of people get really close to make. If you come to me, I'm going to put the brakes on that. You don't know that until after you go turn yourself into an LLC. And then the contractor's board says, great, that's nice. I want a $2 million. Why is that? It's because a lot of people use LLCs to build projects. And then the project is built. We close the LLC. And then let's just say there's construction defect. Now there's no company to come back after.
Oh.
And so they make you hold a much higher bond.
Interesting.
And so what is the reason why you want a corporation is because a corporation is a completely separate entity than you. It is you don't work for you anymore. You actually work for your corporation. And then if somebody wants to sue you, they sue the corporation, and you ideally, personally, will avoid that liability. So your house won't be involved. The only thing that will be exposed is what the corporation owns. So when we get into, for example, we use LLCs quite a lot for rental houses.
Okay.
When people buy rental, let's just say you have 10 rentals. We want to start to segregate those rentals into different LLCs.
And so you're saying, okay, so let me stop you. So if you're a real estate investor and you want to build some passive income, mm-hmm. and you have a, so will you suggest if you have a bunch of single family residences, SFRs, each one is its own LLC, or you put a bunch of them into one LLC, or if you have a fourplex, you put it into one? How does that work?
I don't do each one individually. Okay, so everybody needs to understand when you have an LLC or a corporation, your minimum tax burden, minimum, is $800
yep.
a year.
Okay. Yep.
So ideally, you're going to be making more than $800 a year. So
that's the hope.
it becomes irrelevant. But I personally don't advise one rental house, one LLC. I would typically do 2-3, depending
on... So it's the number of units more than the actual structure.
Yeah, you want to look at the judgment here is look at your LLC as a bucket. Everything you put in the LLC or that is owned by the LLC is exposed to liability. So if I have four rental houses in one LLC, I have a slip and fall at one rental house.
Affects the others.
All three of them or all four of them are all exposed. So what we want to do is we want to group like types of property. I typically like to do this. So if I have a commercial building, I don't want to put that in the same liability bucket as my single family residence.
Okay, so say you have a commercial building.
Yes.
And you have one commercial building, say with, six tenants, right?
Yes.
And then you have another commercial building. Will you, and with another six tenants, will you separate those two?
Or? I would put them in the same bucket, and then we would start to gauge on just how large is this bucket becoming. Because I don't want, when you have a commercial building, you are inviting the public into your building typically.
Right.
So that creates a much higher liability than the residential rental, where you have a single family renting your residential home. Because
okay.
once you start inviting the public in, you now have a different burden, you have a different liability, and you are much more likely to have a slip and fall. Or
commercial versus apartment buildings, which one has more liability?
Commercial.
So if you take in, so the takeaway is, if you're going to buy a commercial building, mm-hmm. don't put the same building with an apartment building into the same LLC.
I don't like to do that.
Good. Great takeaway. So, gosh, we didn't even talk about branding. The only thing that I'm going to say about trademarks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not an IP lawyer. I just play one on TV. Just kidding. But you know, the trademark is a very specialized area of law.
We do trademarks.
You do trademarks. So any words of wisdom for our entrepreneurs out there listening?
You know, it's not that difficult of a process. If you have a logo, if you have a particular product, I do advise you to trademark it, and you can trademark it here in California, and you can trademark it federally. So two different processes. It's affordable in the long run. It's an affordable process, and we do recommend that you actually do that.
Great. Wow. So lots of takeaways. So let's go back. We have 2 minutes to wrap this up. So takeaways.
Okay. Takeaways. Business plan. Business plan. Stop and sit down and think about it. Take the time. Don't skip over that very, very important process. I've done it before. I probably started two or
right.
three businesses, and I did skip over the process until I finally got disciplined enough to sit down and go through it. You can Google business plans. There's templates, I think, on Microsoft Word. Don't skip the process. Let yourself sit down and think of all the what ifs. How many different ways can this thing go wrong? Think about it. Determine how you're going to deal with it when it happens. Hopefully it never happens. But at least if you thought about it ahead of time, it's not a shocker. You've already thought out your game plan. That's my huge takeaway. And then entities. It's important that you choose the right entity. Don't be afraid of it. And then once you get it, and we didn't get a chance to touch on this too much, once you create your entity, you have to treat it correctly, or you don't maintain the protection.
Yeah.
And every lawyer who sues...
You don't want to pierce the veil, right?
Yeah. Every lawyer who sues a corporation sues the corporation and the shareholders and tries to pierce the corporate veil.
Yeah.
And then we, you know, so we argue it every time. It's not just once in a while.
So for me, start with the end in mind.
Yes.
If you haven't started a business, you're at a great place. Don't be so in a hurry to start something. Think carefully. Look at what industries have the most chance or, you know, become a disruptive, an innovator.
Mm-hmm.
Get into an industry that is going up, not down. I would stay away from retail unless you have deep pockets. It's not for the faint of heart. So see what Amazon has done with the whole retail industry. So yeah. Just go with eyes wide open. So we are grateful that you're listening to our show. There's so much more to come. We have great guests lined up in many, many areas. So thank you so much for tuning in to Business and Legal Talk with Leo and Claudine here in Power Talk. Have a great weekend.